This is Digital Story Podcast number 575, March 14th, 2017. Today's theme is Existing Light is All Right. I'm Derek Story. Having departed to Southern California on a minute's notice last week, I grabbed my daily shoulder bag and headed out the door. It contained the gear that I carry on a daily basis to the office. Nothing more, nothing less. The only flash I had was the pop-up on the Pentax KP. And as it turned out, I never needed it. So I thought, well, capturing life by existing light would be a good topic for today's show because there are certain things that I do to make sure that the images live up to the standards that I want. So existing light literally is that. No flash. We're using the sun, we're using light coming in through the window, we're using incandescent lights, whatever is existing, that's what we're stuck with. Now, a flash is helpful in a lot of ways. You can control the color a little bit better with the flash. You can direct the light, definitely more easier with a flash. And we're not stuck with some of the weird things that happen when you shoot by existing light. However, on the other hand, existing light can look very dramatic, very natural, and very much like you're there, as opposed to flattening out the scene as a flash often does. So I've been living by existing light more or less for my personal work for a long time, ever since ISOs became reasonable at 1600 or above. I said, you know what? I'm putting a relatively fast lens on here and I'm going to shoot existing light. That doesn't mean I don't use flash, but I use it mainly for my commercial work or for shots for other people, in all honesty. When they're for me, I'd rather roll the dice and go existing light because I love the look. I love the adventure, and I love the challenge of shooting with existing light. So I have five aspects or five features or five characteristics or five techniques, whatever you want to call them, for existing light photography that really helps me get the most out of my camera and come as close as possible to images that I truly enjoy. So let's get going with them. First one, well, you could probably guess this one, prime lenses or pro zooms. A kit lens is very difficult to use in an existing light photography once you move indoors or once the sun goes down. Why? Because the maximum aperture of f3.5 or f4 fades very quickly, and next thing you know, your maximum aperture is f5.6 if you zoom out at all. And you're not going to do a whole lot of great low light photography at f5.6. You have to jack the ISO way up and way farther than you really should have to, in all honesty. Prime lenses, on the other hand, let you hang out around f2, right? A little bit less sometimes, f1.4 or f1.7. or 1.8, somewhere like that, or sometimes a little bit over, f2.4 or f2.8, somewhere in there. Either way, when you're in that range, when you're between f1.4 and f2.8, those wide aperture settings, you just have so many more options in existing light photography, especially when the light is on the dim side. So prime lenses that you can really count on, that you really like the look that they produce at the wider apertures and have the ability to go to wide apertures, those are key. And you've got to have, in my opinion, at least one of those in your bag. Now, I'm going to talk about the Pentax KP later in the show, but I'm going to tell you right now, it's one of the cameras that I had on this trip. And the lenses that I used weren't spectacularly fast, but they were fast enough. The zoom that I had was f2.8-4, and then one of the lenses is f3.2, and the other lens is f2.4. So, as I said, not blazing fast, but definitely fast enough to get the work done. Now, on my OMD EM5 Mark II, my fast lens is that Panasonic 20mm f1.7. It's a slim lens. I can carry it with me. It's with me all the time. And of course, that is really nice for existing light photography. But I know those lenses, I love those lenses, and I make sure that I have at least one or two of those lenses with me. Effective auto ISO. Now, I bring this up because to me, existing light photography isn't just going to ISO 1600 or ISO 3200, parking it there, and just shooting away. I only want to move the ISO up as needed. So what I like are auto ISOs that are intelligent. And both of my cameras that I had with me, the Olympus and the Pentax, are very good at handling auto ISO. You set the upper limit. And for example, on the Pentax, I set it at 6400. And on the OMD, I set it at 3200. So that way, I don't have to worry about going way up if the light goes way down. I'll get a shake warning or whatever, but I won't be zooming up into ISO ranges that I'm not comfortable with. On the other hand, when I'm shooting in decent light, I'm not locked in way up there at a high ISO. It can creep down. It can go down to 400 or 200 or even 100 if the light is plentiful enough. And how it moves along the spectrum is very important to me. As I said, I only want the ISO to go up as needed, and I love intelligent auto ISO. If you're an existing light photographer, I think it's one of the things that you should look for in your camera. And if you have a good camera that has auto ISO already, really learn how to use it and set the limits so that you get the performance out of it that you want. Another thing that I really depend on when I'm shooting existing light, no flash, but just working in these different situations, is smart metering. I'm going to talk about the Pentax a fair amount because I was testing it on this trip. And one of the things that I just loved about its segmented metering, its evaluative metering, is that it really could read a scene. And for instance, and I published one of these shots in the latest installment of my review of the KP on thedigitalstory.com, one of the shots had this really bright light streaming in through an open window on the left side of the frame. I didn't do anything to compensate at all. I framed the shot with that window in the shot, and then I had two subjects that were indoors, and I just framed the shot as I wanted to frame it, used the metering, depended on the metering, and took the image. And I thought it was very interesting that the camera read the scene properly. It exposed for my subjects, and it let the window light just go blazingly hot, as it should. So I have, you know, this hot window on the left side with white light pouring through, but my subjects are exposed properly. They aren't underexposed, being thrown off by that bright light on the left side of the frame. And that's what I'm looking for in smart metering. I want a camera that can do that. Now, yes, I know how to compensate for that scene. So, yes, I could use exposure compensation or lock-in exposure or do any number of things to render it properly. However, when I'm shooting in those situations, when I'm shooting people and in changing light and all that kind of stuff, I don't want to lose shots. And, I mean, that is the thing that is of the biggest concern to me, is losing a shot. And a lot of times you can lose a shot in a second. A second can be the difference between getting it or not getting it. And fiddling around with your camera can lead to losing a lot of shots. So I would rather come up with a system, especially when I'm shooting existing light, that allows the camera to deal with these situations and allows me to focus on composition and timing. I'll deal with, you know, minor adjustments later on, but what I really want, I want the picture in focus, I want it composed correctly, and I want to catch the decisive moment. And those three things usually don't involve me fiddling with an exposure compensation switch. So intelligent metering is something that I look for, and I love evaluative metering that has smart programming that really knows how to read most of the scenes that we encounter when shooting existing light photography. It's one of the things that's very high on my list of features that I look for in a camera that I'm going to use on a regular basis. RAW plus JPEG. So if I meter right, or if the camera's metering right and everything goes as it should, those JPEGs should be pretty good. They should be pretty good. And if I'm using the JPEGs to load up to social or to the blog or wherever they're going, I want them to be decent. But I shoot RAW plus JPEG because I also like the safety net of having those RAW files. If I look at the JPEG and I go, whoa, that one area really did get kind of hot, or I really crushed the shadows in this other area, or something like that, I want to know that I can go into Capture One Pro or Photos for macOS later on with that file and open up those shadows a bit or recover some of those highlights to pull the image into where I really want it. So I do shoot RAW plus JPEG for existing light photography. I think it's very important in existing light photography, having the JPEGs for quick turnaround work, but having those RAW files, if you need them, for a shot that you go, wow, I really caught the decisive moment. I love the composition and the focusing is spot on. You know what? I'm going to recover some of those highlights, open up those shadows a bit, and I think I have a winner. So RAW plus JPEG, a very big deal for me in existing light photography. And then the fifth thing, and this might surprise you a little bit, but it's the blessed tripod. Because having a compact tripod, regardless of what you use, and we all know the different models that are out there. We're talking a lot about Mi Photo tripods for the next few weeks because they're sponsoring this podcast along with Red River Paper. But I use Mi Photos anyway, so I'm fine with talking about them. Or, you know, one of the other tripods that you like, a Joby or whatever you like. But having some sort of tripod that you can have with you is very important for existing light photography because it allows you to do long exposures without jacking up the ISO to some, you know, obscene level. It allows you to do better HDRs, and it allows you to extend the depth of field when you need to. In other words, when you need to close down that aperture a bit to extend the depth of field, and you don't want to jack the ISO up, but yet, you know, you go, I want to shoot at f11 or whatever it is you want to shoot, and the shutter speed is now down around a fifth of a second, that's where having a tripod can really help you get good results. Now, the tripod doesn't need to be huge. It just needs to be big enough to get the job done. And it also needs not to be too big so that you don't have it with you. It's not going to do you or me any good if it's, you know, back home, you know, under the bed in your bedroom instead of, you know, in your camera bag or in the car or wherever it should be. The tripod really does help us with existing light photography. It presents us with a set of options that we would not have otherwise. And the main thing that it does is it protects image quality by keeping us from having to jack the ISO up too high just because we're in a low light situation and we want to prevent camera shake. So those are the five things that help me with existing light photography. I love this type of shooting. It's very exciting to me. If you like it also, think about some of these things that I talked about. Think about some of the things that are important to you that maybe I didn't cover, and maybe fine-tune your technique a bit so that you can really nail it, so you can really hit it out of the park when you choose not to use a flash. This week's three-legged adventure with the Mi Photo Road Trip Air has to do with an unexpected giant family group shot that was totally unplanned. As I've alluded to throughout the show, I had to just bug out of Santa Rosa, get down to Southern California, basically as soon as I finished the podcast last week. I bugged out almost right afterwards. Fortunately, I had planned on using the Mi Photo tripod on the road trip. I think I alluded to that last week. So I had it with me, and because it's so small and easy to carry, it wasn't a problem having it with me. It actually fits in my camera bag when it's folded up, and it easily fits in the car, you know, when I'm driving. I had it with me, thank goodness, and so we're down there for a couple days. There's going to be this big family gathering that was not in existence before we left. This actually came out of a situation that was going on down there. Suddenly, I was seeing people that I hadn't seen in years. And I mean, like people that I really like. And this thing was growing and growing and growing. And I'm going, oh my gosh, look at the folks that are here. This is really exciting and wonderful. And I said, we have to capture this moment. This is a historical moment that's happening, and we need to record it. So you know what I like to do when it's time to record a historical moment with a bunch of people is get them all out of their comfort zone and put together a group shot. So about an hour into this, before anyone had a chance to bug out, I organized a group shot. And I got them all outside in front of the house. This is a standard classic group shot. You got the house in the background. You got all the people. And I went and I grabbed the Mi Photo Road Trip. And I set it up really quickly. Now, the thing about this is you have to do this quickly. People are not interested in hanging around a long time. So you have to be somewhat practiced or adept in order to keep their attention long enough to pull off this group shot. So the first thing that I noticed was that the one twist to extend the legs all the way out was wonderful. I had played with it a little bit before I left with the Mi Photo. But literally, you just take the bottom leg and you twist it. It's got a couple clicks. You just click, 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 pull out, and then click back, and they lock into place. So I got the legs out. I got the tripod set up. And now it has an Arca Swiss head on top, which I absolutely, Arca Swiss is far and away my favorite way to attach a camera to a tripod. And in part because my OMD EM5 Mark II has an Olympus grip that the whole bottom of the grip is an Arca Swiss plate. It's just built right into it. It's really nice. I just leave it on all the time. And so all I had to do then was pull out the EM5 Mark II, slide it into the Arca Swiss mount on the ball head of the Mi Photo, and I was ready to go. Now, a couple little things that I noticed when I was setting up the tripod, I wasn't aware of this when I first started examining the tripod, but they put a bubble level inside the Arca Swiss mount on the Mi Photo. So when I was setting it up, all I had to do with the tripod is just, you know, I pulled the legs out, I set it up, and then I just used the ball head and I centered that little dot in the level, the bubble level. It literally took me 2 seconds. And then all I had to do was slide the camera in and frame the shot. So it was actually faster than using the electronic levels on the camera. I really love that. So then I just set up the shot. Now, I do it the old-fashioned way, where I use the 12-second self-timer on the Olympus and then run into the shot. And sometimes other photographers will go, well, why do you do that? I mean, why don't you just, you know, use your iPhone to trigger it? There's a real reason why I do it. There's something about the excitement of me getting into the shot. And sometimes I'll even mess it up a little bit. I'll get there a little late or something on purpose. There's something about the excitement of me getting into the shot that keeps everyone energized. It does. When you look at the group shots that I shoot using this method, their eyes are open, they're excited, they're smiling, sometimes they're laughing. I'm sure I'm an entertaining sight as I run toward the group and then try to, you know, find my spot in the shot. So that is why I do that instead of the other way, because it just creates energy. So I got in there and I did 3 shots. 2 of them I really like. You know, one of them is kind of a silly one where I'm telling everyone to scrunch together. And then one of them is just looks good. It's just nice and clean. It's beautiful. The Olympus did a great job. The Mi Photo did a great job. And then as soon as it was over, all I had to do was slide the Olympus out of the Arca Swiss mount on the Mi Photo. I didn't have to fool with plates or anything because it's, you know, built into the camera, you know, the camera grip, and folded up the tripod. Again, one twist, boom, all those legs go up, folded it up, and I was ready to go back and enjoy the party. And it was terrific. And I tell you, that shot means so much to me because of the people that are in it and because it turned out so well. And of course, I shared that shot with everyone that wanted it. In fact, I was started an email list, the party, and I had people coming up to me and saying, hey, you know, could you send me a copy of that photo? And then I'd had the email list right there. I said, just write your name and email right down on here and I'll make sure you get it. And I turned it around the next day, which I think is really important on these sort of things. Turned that shot around the next day so everyone had it. All of this was made possible because I am generally prepared for these sort of situations. I have the tripod. I have the Arca Swiss grip on my camera. Now I have the Mi Photo with me all the time. No matter where I am, I'm going to have that tripod with me. Capturing that group shot was really, it was special to me, and I'm just really thankful I was able to do it. So if you want to learn more about the MiPhoto line of tripods, look for the colorful tile on all the pages of the digital story. We have it there. You just click on there. You go over to our landing page that's there. And if you decide that you want one for yourself, use coupon code THEDIGITALSTORY, all one word, and you'll save 10% and get free shipping. By the way, mine is red, but there are, I think 7 colors. So you have lots to choose from. I was glad I had it, and I'm so happy that I have that group shot. First impressions of the Pentax KP DSLR. So I've been alluding to this camera for a while, and now I'm ready to do my first hands-on report of it. I really feel like I know what this camera is about. I'm going to list 10 things that I really like, and then I have a couple nits to add to the list. But let's start out with the 10 things that I really like. First of all, it is super compact for a 24 megapixel DSLR. When I keep the 21 millimeter Pentax Prime lens mounted on it, which is not a pancake, but it's darn close, the Pentax KP fits in my everyday bag right alongside my mirrorless camera. And so that's really saying something, to be able to have the DSLR with the optical viewfinder and the little larger sensor right in there with my mirrorless gear. So another thing that I really like is the sensor-based image stabilization. I got hooked on this with Olympus. They spoiled me. They did. They spoiled me because I always had 5-axis image stabilization on my Olympus cameras. And then I would go to another camera that I was using at the time. And the only time I got stabilization is when I had an expensive lens that had it in there. And it just seemed wrong. So with the KP, I have the 5-axis sensor-based stabilization all the time now. That way, as I move between the Olympus and the Pentax, my world has consistency again. And I really like that. Cool lenses. And I love these lenses. I'm using the Redline lenses as the main lenses on the Pentax. HD Pentax DA, and that's the one for the crop sensor. FA is for full frame. And they're the limited edition. And so I have the 70 millimeter f2.4, which is a very compact lens. I have the 21 millimeter f3.2, which is also compact. And remember, we have a 1.5 crop factor on this. So the 70 millimeter is really a 105. The 21 millimeter is really what? A 31.5 millimeter. And then I'm using the zoom lens, the 20 to 40 millimeter zoom lens, which is a 30 to 60 millimeter. All of these, the limited edition with the red line on them, they are a blast, and they are really good optics. Now, because I shoot Pentax in my film life also, I have some pretty good optics over there for the full frame, including the 35 millimeter f2, the 50 millimeter f1.7, and then all sorts of zoom lenses and goodies to go with it. And those will all work on my Pentax KP. I've become really fond of shooting with these HD limited edition lenses, so the bulk of my shooting is with the Redline lenses. Super intelligent features. I mean, there's just all sorts of really smart stuff on here. One of the things that I like about Olympus and Panasonic, Sony, and Pentax is that they push the envelope more and they include more features. You know, so you have built-in time-lapse on this camera. You have built-in multiple exposures. When you do auto bracketing, you have just this really wide 5-stop range on both sides. You know, just all sorts of neat things like that. One of my favorites on this is being able to establish the program line for when I'm shooting in program mode. I like having program mode as my, you know, my default exposure mode. And then if I need to switch to something else, I can. With this camera, I can choose the type of program mode that I want. So do I want it bias toward wider apertures? Do I want it bias towards depth of field? The program mode that I'm using, the program line that I'm using, is that I have set it up for what they call MFT, which means that the camera communicates with the lens. It knows what its sharpest f-stops are, and then it leans towards those f-stops in program mode. So it is full of features like that. Another thing that I like is that you have a choice of both DNG and PEF, which is the native RAW file for Pentax, or JPEGs for your files. So right now, I mean, there's not a lot of applications out there that allows me to use the native Pentax RAW file, the PEF. So I just shoot in DNG. And right away, I can use the DNGs in Photos for Mac OS X. I can use them in Capture One. I can use them in Lightroom, wherever I want. So I have a brand new camera, but I can use the RAW files with my existing software. And when those updates come, they come. Great. I'll look at the PEFs in those applications when they support it. But until then, I'm perfectly fine shooting the DNGs. This is a great option. I wish more camera manufacturers did that. The customized grip. You may have read about the customized grip. It ships, the KP ships in North America anyway, with three different grips. And you use a little Allen wrench to attach them. There is a very slim one. And then there's one with medium depth. And then there's one with greater depth. Now, they said that the one with greater depth, which is the largest of the three, is for when you're using longer lenses so that you can, you know, better balance the camera. I tried all three, and maybe it's because my hands are larger, but for my everyday shooting, I love the big grip. It is so comfortable. So I'm just leaving the big grip on there all the time. The other two are fine, but they're not as comfortable. And, you know, it really doesn't take up that much more room. I mean, I already have the lens coming out the front and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going with the larger grip, and I love having the option of being able to choose which size grip that I want. Also in the customization category, I like being able to customize the different buttons, the different function buttons. Again, I got spoiled with this with Olympus that just allows you to customize everything on the camera. The Pentax isn't as customizable as Olympus. I don't think anything on the planet is as customizable as an Olympus camera. But there is lots of customization available, and I do have all the buttons programmed exactly the way I want, and I really like having that option. The LCD is wonderful, and it's articulated, and it is the up and down. You may hear me clicking away at this thing because I'm holding the camera. Up and down is what I need 90% of the time because I'm either holding the camera up over my head or have it down low. The menu system, super friendly and wonderful graphics. And there's nothing that really helps you ease into a camera as much as a friendly menu system. And right away, I felt at home with the menu system on the Pentax KP. And I really appreciate the work that the user interface folks did to make it easy to use. Now, the camera has a distinctive look that people are either going to love or they're going to hate. It's one of those things. There's not going to be any lukewarm people on this. I've read the forums and I've read a lot of comments online about the way this camera looks, and it has been love or hate. I fall into the love category, but you should really take a look at it and see what you think. The color rendition with the files, of course, Pentax is known for great color, and this camera definitely has it. The greens are vibrant, the reds are well controlled, and the blues are very natural. It just makes pretty pictures. It really does. It has Wi-Fi built in, and I read some people carping about the crappy Wi-Fi on Pentax cameras. So I was a little nervous about it because Wi-Fi is something that I use a lot. I love it on my Olympus and Panasonic cameras. And I was really, you know, hoping that it would be good on the Pentax. And I fired it up. And, you know, what I did is I programmed the FX1 button on the side of the camera to enable Wi-Fi. So I have one button Wi-Fi. I just push it and the Wi-Fi turns on. I downloaded the app for my iPhone, and it works just like it does with all my other cameras. I really haven't had a problem with it at all. The transfer rate is good. I don't know. It's good Wi-Fi. And finally, excellent high ISO performance. I know this is one of the things that the marketing folks use to promote this camera. I haven't pushed it up to whatever, you know, they said the top limit is, but I find myself regularly shooting at ISO 3200 and 6400 without even thinking about it. I allow the auto ISO to go up to 6400, and in order to get the sharpness that I want, you know, I let it creep up because maybe I'm stopping down to f4 or 5.6, and the ISO performance is fantastic. So I've gone up to 128, and it hangs together really well. I haven't pushed it much beyond that. I haven't needed to, but I just like being able to shoot at 3200, 6400 without really thinking about it. So as for nits, I do have a couple, and they're all around the battery. I think the battery is too small. I know they're trying to make a very compact camera here, and I think they did a great job with that. But it feels like the battery should last a little bit longer than it does. And then as far as the battery charger, I don't know why Pentax still uses, I complained about this way back at the K5. They still use that battery charger where you need a cord to plug it in instead of having the prongs built into the back of the charger. So what I have to do now is get the little prongs from my MacBook Pro adapter and, you know, jerry-rig it into this. And I finally just, you know, I spent $15 and bought a travel charger that has the prongs in the back. But I just feel like I shouldn't have to do that. Why not give us a charger that has the prongs in the back? Just make it easy on us. So those are my two nits. Overall, I'm really digging this camera. I love shooting with it. And if you're needing a DSLR to complement your mirrorless kit, and you don't necessarily feel the need to go with Canon or Nikon, and you want something a little different, take a look at the Pentax KP. I think it's a terrific camera. I'm getting, you know, these lenses, I'm spending about $450 on it. In the zoom, I spent $650 on it. They're all pro quality. The body right now is $1,100, $1099. And it's beautiful. I'm going to use it for commercial work. And it's a terrific system. So if you're not locked into Canon and Nikon, take a look at it and see what you think. I'm loving it, and I'm so glad that I made this particular leap. All right, just a few updates. I want to mention that we're sold out of the San Francisco workshop. You know, so last week, that last seat filled up, and we're going to have it next month. I'm totally excited. I think we still have a seat open for the road trip up the Northern California coast. And that's in May. And I also think that we have a seat open for the rail adventure that goes from Chicago to New Orleans. And that's in June. If you're interested in either one of those workshops, go to our workshops page at thedigitalstory.com. And you can check it all out. And like I said, I'm hoping to announce the October fall workshop here pretty soon. So we're just working on the dates right now. Also, if you purchase through Amazon or B&H, if you go to the digital story first, click on our tiles in the center column there. B&H is above the Amazon tile. That'll take you over to those sites. Then you can search for what you want. Doing that helps support the site, and I truly appreciate folks who make that extra click to do that. And speaking of supporting the site, how about our Patreon members? We got a few signups and one very generous signup this week. You know who you are. Thank you so much. Oh my gosh. I was just thrilled when I saw that. Patreon members are really helping us, you know, run this podcast the way that we want to run it and not be stuck doing underwear commercials and things like that. And finally, a big nod to the folks at Red River Paper who stand by this site, who stand by this podcast, who produce a great product, and who are really nice during the whole process. That includes customer service for their paper customers. That includes working with other photographers. And they keep the prices down. What more could you want? So Red River Paper, they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story, and they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I ran a bit long. Sorry about that, but just too much exciting stuff, right? Until next week, have a great week. Go out, take some pictures, fine-tune your existing light technique, and then meet me back here next week, and we'll do another edition of The Digital Story. Until then, bye-bye now.